Chapter 21. The Refuge, the Usan Colony Primary Refuge, 2553 CE, the Age of Reclamation. Baltol was pacing back and forth in front of the monitors. "Are they through the hull yet?" he asked again, as Zelk Tilk, the scout eye operator, moved the surveillance bot in for a closer view.
"They are now removing the plate, Kaidan."
Zelk was squat, stocky, powerful of arm. He had mandibles with a number of small metallic studs punctured into them, studs made from metal he'd found in the debris field. He had once been an up-and-coming float fighter, but had given it up to work in colony external maintenance. His preference was being out in space, going on several expeditions to tug dangerously close asteroids to higher orbits, and was one of the few Baltol trusted in the small maintenance vehicles. Baltol looked at the monitor, could see the eight-legged maintenance vehicle, like an arachnoid of metal, clinging to the hull of Section 2. On either side of it were metal and crystal cylinders, field interruption stations, each producing a transmission wavelength that had allowed them to be magnetically fixed to Section 2's outer hull. Expanded to interlace, the fields had provided entry for the external maintenance vehicle by breaking up the repellent field in that discrete area. It also extended a containment field over the gap opened in the hull to keep the air pressure in. There was an internal airlock as well, a pressurization failsafe. Baltol could just make out the rough square where Satenz and the others had cut through the hull, using Forerunner technology no one quite understood. Beams of light that seemed to move narrow lines of materials apart, as if the whole material was simply persuaded on a molecular level to move out of the way. But if a Sangheili chanced to put his bare hand in the beam of light, perchance, no harm was done. Baltol could see half of each of the three Sangheili on the mission, Satenz, Torin, and Vornik, on the mission, each one limbed on the left side by the sun, the other half invisible in pitch-black shadow. "Cannot you move the scout eye in a little closer?" he asked.
"If I do, at that range there is risk. It is one more anomaly to be spotted by Kinsa's followers," Zelk said. "Very well," Baltol muttered. He had a dark foreboding about this mission. "I wish I had gone along." "You, Kaidan? It is I who should have gone.
But Satenz said I would be needed here. Torin and Vornik have almost no experience in pressure suits."
"How you do reassure me," Baltol said acidly as he resumed pacing. He had never admitted to himself before now how very much Satenz meant to him. Truly, he felt that Satenz was like a son to him, and yet he had sent him on a suicide mission.
Baltol stopped in front of another monitor that showed an internal view of the new isolation ward in the primary section. He could see Kurse Patel, the bio-rep, calmly noting symptoms in a voice recorder as he stood over one of the snarling third-phase patients strapped to a cot. His heart sank at the sight. Was there any hope for his people? Sometimes Baltol thought he could feel the desperation of all the Usan Sangheili like a tightening cable, each strand in the cable another Usan keening as it readied to snap.
"We are entering the hull," said Satenz softly.
The transmission spurred Baltol to hurry back to the drone monitor. He couldn't see any of them now. They'd slipped through the gap.
"Shall I activate his helmet transmitter?" Zelk asked. "Not unless they are discovered. The enemy might detect the signal." "We have located the airlock to the—"
There was a moment of static. Then,
"The airlock is opening from the other side. Torin! Back! Get back to the— They are here! They—" "Zelk, switch on the visual," Baltol commanded.
A moment, and then the image flickered to life in another monitor, the feed from Torin's helmet.
"I am receiving only Torin so far."
Baltol stared and saw, from the point of view of the visual recorder on Torin's helmet, a glass-helmeted face grimacing in hatred, a face with the red web marks of the blood sickness.
one of Keynes's, wearing a pressure suit. They must have been aware of the intrusion for a while now, Balthol said, his pulse thumping. And then there was a blurred motion, and an axe smashed into Torin's faceplate. Sangheili blue blood splashing on it, covering the gleeful face of the attacker, the sound of Torin screaming in pain.
I have Satens, Zelk muttered. And the monitor image changed. It was the visual on Satens's helmet as he looked at the blood-sick adherent who'd murdered Torin, straightening up with the bloody axe, turning, lunging, the weapon raised, howling at Satens. Five flashes as Satens quickly fired his plasma rifle. There might have been a sixth, but there was a clicking that informed Balthol the rifle had malfunctioned after the final shot. Many of the colony's weapons were breaking down. He saw the enemy still staggering at Satens, then Satens's rifle smashing the damaged lunatic's helmet as he swung like a hammer. His foe collapsed, but then five more rushed at Satens, dragging him down, their faces crowding the monitor, which quickly went black.
What? Where is he? Balthol asked breathlessly. They damaged his recorder. Try switching to Vornik, Balthol shouted. I can't pick up his transmission. Then use the scout eye, Zelk. A flicker, and the monitor switched to the view of the scout eye, maintaining the orb's position near the arachnoid maintenance craft. There, Vornik in his pressure suit was jumping, in the area of low gravity, out through the gap cut in the hull. A spurt of energy or a projectile. It went by too fast for Balthol, to be sure, zipped up past Vornik as he scrambled to the hatch of the small vessel. He vanished inside, and the hatch closed. The vehicle quickly lifted off, but one enemy in a pressure suit was emerging from the hull gap, and then another, the two of them firing sidearms at the eight-legged maintenance vehicle, scoring its sides with black marks, one shot finding its way into the repulsor tube. A blue-white flare vented from the repulsor tube, and the vehicle went spinning off into the void, its engine damaged. Balthol stared, feeling weak from grief in one instant and energized with fury the next. I will call every soldier, every able Sangheili we have. If they have murdered Satens, I will do whatever I must to extinguish this blight from the colony. There was a crackling from a monitor, and then suddenly it showed the face of Keynsa himself up close. He was using the helmet taken from Satens. Balthol, are you there? Keynsa demanded, leering. Transmit my voice, Zelk, Balthol said hoarsely. Keynsa, can you hear me? Ah, there is the Kaidan. But I am the Kaidan now. You are the false Kaidan. The forgotten gods call to you. Submit yourself to the outer emptiness, Balthol. Do that within, and your precious Satens will not die. Keynsa's face was marked with the red mesh of the blood sickness, but there was a trembling, insistent control in him. He seemed to be right on the edge of losing control, yet always in cunning command. He is well known to be your favorite. Will you keep him alive, Balthol? Then surrender to me. Balthol's eyes had swung to another monitor. Something was there, and an idea formed. Suppose that we let the forgotten gods decide, Keynsa. Any gods you like, let them decide. Your people against mine in the combat section. Float fight, Keynsa. I will be there, as will you. 10 against 10. That will be the way of it. All surveillance nodes will be trained on the fight. Everyone will see. What do you say? If we lose, all of our fates are in your hands. The combat section. Keynsa drew back. Behind him were several figures, two carrying weapons.
Satenz was there, bound with wires, lying on the floor. The figure moved. Satenz was still alive. The float fight has never before been used in that way. Why should we do it?
You can demonstrate for all to see that the gods are truly on your side, and it will all be over shortly.
If you are afraid of me, if you have not the honor to meet me in combat section, everyone will soon know of it.
A priestly figure armored with Apache cuirass stepped into view.
We should speak of this. I hear the forgotten gods sing of it. Forerunner Sun and Forerunner Moon would make you the conqueror, Kinsa.
I will consider the offer, Kinsa said reluctantly, and switched off the monitor. Zelk stared at Baltol as if he were the one gone insane with blood sickness.
But what if it goes against you, Kaidan?
I cannot attack the sections directly without killing everyone in them, including the innocent. All that we need to repair the colony would be lost in the battle.
And Satenz would die.
This way, we bring Kinsa out in the open, and we'll finally have a chance to finish him.
The blood sickness may prompt them to accept. It makes them yearn for confrontation.
Yes, such a challenge is innate to their madness, Baltol said.
I believe he will accept. It is the only way to save Satenz and end this conflict once and for all.
The Journey's Sustenance, a supply ship for the fleet of Blessed Veneration, Usen System, 2553 CE, the Age of Reclamation.
You are correct, D'Aero declared. There is a battle raging there, and a damaged craft. Something for exterior hull work.
D'Aero, Tool, Gatorik, and Zoreskin were on the bridge of the Journey's Sustenance, gazing rapidly at their holographic imaging tracker. They could see the slowly spinning eight-legged maintenance vehicle moving away from the enormous, geometrically odd artifact. Possibly some form of colony.
This could be an opportunity,
Zo said.
D'Aero, will you be guided by me?
I do not know what else to do in the face of all this, other than be guided by you.
Then get as close as you safely can to that small vessel. Keep out of probable firing range from the colony there, if that's truly what it is.
It will be done.
The small tumbling vehicle, like an arachnid blown on the wind, spun slowly through the void, closer and closer as D'Aero approached.
Will the tug field have enough power to stop it?
So asked.
Possibly. You wish to bring it into the freight hold?
I do, if there are no signs that it is near destruction.
I will scan it, but cannot offer surety that the object is stable.
They took the risk and tugged it into the freight airlock. A clunk was felt all through Journey's Sustenance as the artificial gravity and pressurization were returned to the freight hold and the small vehicle banged down onto the deck. They could see it on the ship's internal monitors. It had landed on its leg-like struts, but one of them was badly damaged and the vessel was tilted askew, giving off smoke.
Great ones, if you are the gods I once believed you to be, please don't let my actions kill us all.
Zo thought, as he and Gatorik and Tool armed themselves with carbines and rushed to the ramp that would take them down to the freight hold hatchway. Zo took a long breath and then opened the hatch, stepping through. The air was acrid with a metallic burning smell. Smoke was coiled near the ceiling. Zo took the lead, calling out,
"Is anyone alive in there?"
"They might not be able to hear you through the hull," Tool remarked.
Zo ducked under the vehicle's fuselage, feeling heat pouring off it, and came to the hatchway. He reached out to it, but the hatch opened on its own. A ladder extruded, and a coughing Sangheili half climbed, half fell down onto the deck, followed by a wisp of smoke. He was armed with a blade of a sort Zo had never seen. He wore a pressure suit, a rather antique one,
more cumbersome than anything Zo knew, but he'd taken off his helmet. The stranger turned, wiping his eyes, and then stared at Zo as if he weren't sure he was seeing correctly.
"Ah, yes.
I suspect you may never have seen a Sanshayum in person," said Zo. He lowered his weapon. "I am Zo Reskin, once called the Prophet of Clarity. We mean you no harm, if you in turn mean us none." The Sangheili gaped, then looked, blinking, at Tuul and Gatorik. The stranger spoke, but Zo couldn't quite decipher the dialect. "Something about the gods?"
"Did you understand that?"
Zo asked, looking at Gatorik and Tuul.
"Somewhat," said Tuul ruefully.
"It sounds like old Sangheili. Words I don't know, strange accents. But I think he was asking if you were one of the gods."
"Speak slowly to him, as well as you can,
and tell him I am merely a friend to the Sangheili. Tell him we mean him no harm." Tuul conveyed the message, and the stranger signified understanding.
"Prophet!" called De'Aero on the comm system.
Zo didn't bother to correct him on such a point anymore. Could he be a prophet if the prophecies he once held sacred were proven false?
"What is it?"
"That craft! Get away from it! The ship says it's highly unstable. Get out of there! I must eject it from the airlock. Now!"
"Everyone out," Zo called, hurrying toward the door.
Tuul spoke to the newcomer, and they all rushed toward the hatch. In moments they were through it, then Gatorik slammed it shut.
"Decompress and eject, De'Aero," he shouted.
Zo rushed up the ramp to the corridor and the bridge. He felt the ship shiver as the small craft was released, and hurried to the holomonitor that tracked it out into space. He saw the vessel, in miniature in the holo, spinning away in the void before it exploded. The flames were there only a split second, snuffed out by the vacuum. A few seconds later, the hull clattered, some of the fragments striking it.
"Any breach in the hull?" Zo asked.
"Nothing broke through," De'Aero reported, looking at his instruments. He turned to take a long, suspicious look at the stranger, who was gawking around the bridge.
"Prophet, you think he could have deliberately caused that craft to explode? Perhaps it was a trap."
"I do not think so," Zo said.
"I think he is but a dazed, lost Sangheili.
We will attach translators. Give one to him, and with those and the language we have in common, we can hope to understand one another." The translator devices were small disks that affixed to the skin above hearing membranes. Once they were affixed, with the ship providing cybernetic input, Tuul introduced everyone on the bridge to the stranger. He replied, speaking slowly.
"My name, that by which you call me, it is Vornik Gred. I am living there."
He pointed at the colony section visible in a holo viewer.
"This, the refuge. Usa Salis. This is his colony?"
Zo asked, speaking slowly.
"Yes. Usa colony. You? Where are you from?"
Zo sighed. Where indeed was he from? Nowhere now. "I grew up in High Charity. You likely don't know what I'm talking about.
De'Aero Sabut.
He is from Sanghelios itself." Vornik's eyes widened.
"Not possible."
"Oh, but it is," said De'Aero. "I grew up in Zolam, a state in the southern parts of the continent of Kivro. I ranged the hills hunting Meogafet and Dormir, and I have even killed the Helioskrill with a spear in the ancient way."
Vornik stepped a little closer to De'Aero, reached out a trembling hand, and De'Aero suffered his shoulder to be touched.
"Yes," said De'Aero, "I am real. A mortal being. From Sanghelios."
You will take us there? Sang Helios?
Now that, I suppose, is a larger question. We have to know we can trust you first.
Zo turned to Daero. You are captain of this vessel. I wish for us to move closer to the colony, and I wish to take our own maintenance craft there. Will you permit this, and stay nearby, as long as you can wait for me?
You were thinking this one here can get you into the colony safely?
I am going to attempt just that, if he is willing. I have to make contact with these people. This discovery. You don't realize what this means to me. I must go to the colony.
You are not going alone, Prophet. Daero looked at Gatorik. You must go with this fool if he is so insistent.
Then you think me such a fool too? Gatorik asked.
Your supposition is right. So I am.
Here is one more fool, then, said Tool, tapping his own chest.
Then the Hurrigok came in, drifting over the floor, snaking its head curiously toward the stranger. It stretched tentacles out to him, signaling a desire to repair his pressure suit.
Vornik scrambled backward from Sluggish Drifter, snarling, snapping mandibles, raising his weapon.
No, Tool said, stepping between them. He serves us. Repairs what is broken.
Vornik seemed repelled by the Hurrigok. He clearly had never seen one.
Yes, said Zo, struck by a thought. Sluggish Drifter repairs things, Vornik. Is there much that needs repairing on your colony?
Vornik looked at him.
Yes, very much. So very much.
That thing can repair our world?
Much of it, yes.
Things you cannot repair. Often the Hurrigok can.
Then we will go. All of us.
The Refuge, the Usun Colony Primary Refuge, 2553 CE, the Age of Reclamation.
What?
Zelk blurted.
Me? Yes. He chose you to wear this.
Zelk had stepped into the hallway from the colony control center, looking for the Kaidan. Kerspatel, meanwhile, had just arrived, looking for Zelk. Kerspa put the necklace of rank around Zelk Tilk's neck. It signified that he spoke for the Kaidan in Balthol's absence.
He seemed to think that if the vessel that has approached is a danger to us, you are the best one to deal with it in his absence. Your experience with zero gravity, I presume?
You are acting Kaidan. But do not excite yourself. I am sure Balthol will return, and you will be a mere technology supervisor once more.
He is not really going to the combat section now, is he? Already? He believes this nonsense about the gods judging the contest?
He must. Kinsa has been pressured by his followers to accept the challenge. He is there with his chosen 10 already. But this is no float fight, not truly. It is a chance for each side to kill the other's leaders. That's the truth of it.
And the Kaidan's orders for me?
You are to communicate with the aliens in the vessel, if it is possible, if they seem dangerous. Use what weaponry we have to keep them at bay until he returns. If they can give us aid, then use your own judgment.
Zelk groaned. I should be there with him. I am good in zero gravity, and I was once a good float fighter.
Who is there?
Kaidan?
The voice came from behind Zelk. He turned and realized it was coming from the near-space receiver.
This is Vornik.
Zelk recognized the voice and hurried to the transmitter.
It's Zelk here, Vornik. Where are you? We thought you dead.
I am alive, and I am on a ship with a Sangheili.
He has come here from Sanghelios.
And stranger things yet.
Adjust the repellent field. We are coming in another maintenance craft. Let us in.
Are you blood sick? You are speaking madness. We are already under attack.
They are mostly Sangheili.
From Sanghelios itself. What? Then you believe this?
I do.
And they can repair things we cannot, Selk. Let me speak to the Kaidan. Let them speak to him. He is not here. I am in charge for the moment, but I cannot allow such a thing.
You have always thought me a fool, Selk, but this time you must trust me.
They are here to help us. Just this once. Trust me.
The Refuge, the Usan Colony Combat Section, 2553 CE, the Age of Reclamation. Baltol was fitted with the chest armor and helmet allowed to float fighters. He had a quarter-moon blade in one hand and a spiked cudgel in the other. He floated close to the pushboards, beside the cables of the netting. With him was Zanik Berta, the best available float fighter, and eight other Sangheili with some experience at it, most of them patrollers, colony security, with some experience in combat. For Erm Kurdek, the one-eyed hero of float fighting was poised across the zero-gravity arena, floating in place, tugging on a spiked glove. Even half-blind, he was the most dangerous opponent here. There were nine others beside him, Kinsa adherents readying themselves. But it was Verm who held Baltol's gaze.
Znik, Baltol said, beware. There is no protective grid for the helmets.
He added dryly, Verm Kurdek himself is here.
Just stay behind me, my Kaidan. I will deal with Verm. He is even older than I am.
The priest, in truth a pseudo-priest, since he represented a false faith, was harnessed to a wall bracket behind the net. He had a burn blade in his hand and held it near Satenz, who was bound head to foot, himself tied to a bracket. Baltol watched and saw Satenz squirm in his bonds.
"Where is Kinsa?"
"There," Zanik said, pointing.
Kinsa was coming through the open metal doors in a curved metal wall behind his fighters, lined up raggedly as they bobbed in the gravity-free arena. Kinsa had a mech missile launcher in his hand.
"Kinsa makes 11,"
Zanik observed. "It is supposed to be 10 on 10. And he has a weapon that is not traditional here. Quite dangerous."
Perhaps that was why he pushed for doing this so quickly. "We have no choice. And we have a chance, despite that there are no rules here. His adherents may buckle if he dies." The champion was the first to leap into space, but the others followed almost immediately, pushing off and twisting, angling, swinging one another about in practiced moves that would get them where they wanted. The stretch lines pulled taut between floor and ceiling, passed through the space of the room here and there, to be used as additional propellant bases.
"I'll have to take on Kinsa's champion," Baltol thought, "because he is coming right for me. Kill him, then get to Satenz and free him. And kill Kinsa, if I get the chance."
Baltol positioned himself to push off from the wall, but Zanik had already launched himself on a trajectory to intersect for Erm. Cursing under his breath, Baltol pushed off, his stomach whirling as he rocketed through zero gravity, thinking he would end up overshooting Verm. But Verm was already engaging with Zanik, slashing with one hand, crunching with the spiked fist of the other, cracking Zanik in the helmet so that he spun in the air. Zanik tumbled and rolled to slide out of reach, avoiding the slash that would have disemboweled him if it had connected. Then Baltol was there, but awkwardly positioned and could only passingly clout Verm with his cudgel, making the float fight hero's helmet ring and knocking him out of reach. Flying past, Baltol glimpsed Verm grabbing a stretch line, spinning on it, coming back. Baltol suddenly felt an instinctive warning and turned to see a mech missile coming at him. He twisted left, so the arrow-like bolt of metal slashed by, scraping along his neck.
He saw Kinsey in the distance, cranking another mech missile into place. So the bolt that nearly skewered his throat had come from Kinsa. Baltol grabbed a stretch line and spun, so that the next bolt missed as well. One of Kinsa's followers was there suddenly, roaring as he flew at Baltol, slashing with a burn blade. Baltol blocked it hard with his own blade, and the impact knocked his adversary askew, giving Baltol a chance to bring the cudgel into play. He smashed it underhand into his enemy's knee and felt bones shatter. Shrieking and bent double with pain, he was within reach of Baltol, who then stabbed his blade into his mouth. Another bolt flashed past Baltol, reminding him that Kinsa was somewhere on the perimeters. If he could find Kinsa and kill him, then this savage fight for the colony might come to some resolution. His view of Kinsa was blocked by a cluster of three Sangheili, two of Baltol's patrollers and a very large adherent, all tangled up with one another as they struggled. Airborne puddles of purplish Sangheili blood were spreading in the zero-grav environment. Three patrollers floated by limply, clearly dead. One was almost decapitated, his head just hanging on to his neck by a strip of skin. Baltol pushed off from a stretch line and rocketed over the cluster of three fighters. One of his own was dead, and the other was being choked in spiked grip of the large follower, who was luridly webbed with the marks of blood sickness. Baltol was well positioned above the strangler, and stabbed down hard on the back of the enemy's exposed neck, severing the spine. The impact stopped Baltol, making him wrench about in space as he tried to hold on to his weapon, so that he was swung through a floating cloud of Sangheili blood. He had to spit some from his mouth, and lost his grip on the wet, slick sword hilt. He came out of the blood cloud, straightening up in mid-air, still floating with momentum. Perhaps now is the time to get to Satens, set him free. Blood and struggling fighters blocked his view of Satens. Find him! Then Baltol saw Verm coming toward him, one mandible half broken off, fresh wounds making his face almost unrecognizable. Baltol could only see that one eye glaring out of a mask of purple gore. Beyond him floated the body of Zanik. Verm was flying at Baltol head-on, body stretched out behind him, quartermoon blade sweeping up, roaring out a battle cry. Death to the false Kaidan! Long live Kinsa! Baltol swam in the air to one side, brought his knees up, and kicked at Verm. Verm grabbed at the kicking foot and used it to pull Baltol close. An amateur's move, he sneered. He swung his blade at Baltol's neck. The Kaidan writhed back, so the quartermoon struck a glancing blow but rang resoundingly on Baltol's helmet. A spike of pain lanced through his skull. Anomalous lights danced in Baltol's eyes. Nausea swept through him, and his hearing seemed to twist itself in a knot of unintelligibility. He struggled to get into a fighting position, to strike his enemy with his cudgel, but Verm was positioned over Baltol, quartermoon blade set to rip through the Kaidan's neck. Verm leered in triumph. A bolt of red light from somewhere behind Baltol seared into Verm's face, and instantly charred it to a crisp.